Please, says Susan, her lip wobbling, her eyes fill with tears. We've been running, and the rest of them are dead, and I don't... She starts to sob again. I don't think I can keep going. I get the strange urge to hit my head against the wall. Other people's sobs makes me uncomfortable. It's selfish of me, maybe. We're running from the erudite, says Caleb. If we get off, it will be easier for them to find us. So we would appreciate it if you let us ride into the city with you. Yeah? Edward tilts his head. What have you ever done for us? I helped you when no one else would, I say. Remember? You maybe, but the others? Says Edward. Not so much. Tobias steps forward, so Edward's gun is almost against his throat. My name is Tobias Eaton, Tobias says. I don't think you want to push me off this train. The effect of the name on the people in the car is immediate and bewildering. They lower their weapons. They exchange meaningful looks. Eaton? Really? Edward says, eyebrows raised. I have to admit I did not see that coming. He clears his throat. Fine, you can come. But when we get to the city, you've got to come with us. Then he smiles a little. We know someone who's been looking for you. Tobias Eaton. Tobias and I sit on the edge of the car with our legs dangling over the edge. Do you know who it is? Tobias nods. Who then? It's hard to explain, he says. I have a lot to tell you. I lean against him. Yeah, I say. So do I. I don't know how much time passes before they tell us to get off. But when they do, we are in the part of the city where the factionless live, about a mile from where I grew up. I recognize each building we pass as one I walked by every time I miss the bus home from school. The one with the broken bricks. The one with a fallen street light leaning against it. We stand in the doorway of the train car, all four of us in a line. Susan whimpers. What if we get hurt? She says. I grab her hand. We'll jump together, you and me. I've done this a dozen times and never got hurt. She nods and squeezes my fingers so hard they hurt. On three. One, I say. Two, three. I jump and pull her with me. My feet slam into the ground and continue forward. But Susan just falls to the pavement and rolls onto her side. Aside from a scraped knee, though, she seems to be all right. The others jump off without difficulty. Even Caleb, who has only jumped from a train once before, as far as I know. I'm not sure who could know Tobias among the factionless. It could be Drew or Molly, who failed the Dauntless initiation. But they didn't even know Tobias's real name. And besides, Edward probably would have killed them by now, judging by how ready he was to shoot us. It must be someone from Abnegation, or from school. Susan seems to have calmed down. She walks on her own now, next to Caleb, and her cheeks are drying with no new tears to wet them. Tobias walks beside me, touching my shoulder slightly. It's been a while since I checked that shoulder, he says. How is it? Okay. I brought the pain medicine, luckily, I say. I'm glad to talk about something light. As light as a wound can be, anyway. I don't think I'm letting it heal very well. I keep using my arm or landing on it. There will be plenty of time for healing once all this is over. Yeah. Or it won't matter if I heal, I add silently. Because I'll be dead. Here, he says, taking a small knife from his back pocket and handing it to me. Just in case. I put it in my own pocket. I feel even more nervous now. The factionless lead us down the street, and left, into a grimy alleyway that stinks of garbage. Rats scatter in front of us with squeaks of terror, and I see only their tails slipping between mounds of waste, empty trash cans, soggy cardboard boxes. I breathe through my mouth so I don't throw up. Edward stops next to one of the crumbling brick buildings and forces a steel door open. I wince, half expecting the entire building to fall down if he pulls too hard. The windows are so thick with grime that almost no light penetrates them. We follow Edward into a dank room. In the flickering glow of a lantern, I see people. People sitting next to rolls of bedding. People prying open cans of food. People sipping bottles of water. And children, weaving between the groups of adults. Not confined to a particular color of clothing. Factionless children. We are in a factionless storehouse, and the factionless, who are supposed to be scattered, isolated, and without community, are together inside it. Are together, like a faction. I don't know what I expected of them, but I am surprised by how normal they seem. They don't fight one another or avoid one another. Some of them tell jokes, others speak to each other quietly. Gradually, though, they all seem to realize that we aren't supposed to be there. "Come on," Edward says, bending his finger to beckon us toward him. "She's back here." Stares and silence greet us as we follow Edward deeper into the building that is supposed to be abandoned. Finally, I can't contain my questions any longer. "What's going on here? Why are you all together like this?"
"You thought they, we, were all split up," Edward says over his shoulder. "Well, they were for a while. Too hungry to do much of anything except look for food. But then the stiffs started giving them food, clothes, tools, everything. And they got stronger, and waited. They were like that when I found them. And they welcomed me."
We walk into a dark hallway. I feel at home in the dark, and the quiet that are like the tunnels in Dauntless headquarters. Tobias, however, winds a loose thread from his shirt around his finger, backward and forward, over and over. He knows who we're meeting, but I still have no idea. How is it I know this little about the boy who says he loves me? The boy whose real name is powerful enough to keep us alive in a train car full of enemies. Edward stops at a metal door and pounds on it with his fist.
"Wait, you said they were waiting?" says Caleb.
"What were they waiting for, exactly?"
"For the world to fall apart," Edward says.
And now it has. The door opens, and a severe-looking woman with a lazy eye stands in the doorway. Her steady eye scans the four of us.
"Strays," she says.
"Not hardly, Therese." He jabs his thumb over his shoulder at Tobias.
"This one's Tobias Eaton."
Therese stares at Tobias for a few seconds, then nods.
"He certainly is. Hold on."
She shuts the door again. Tobias swallows hard, his Adam's apple bobbing.
"You know who he's going to get, don't you?" says Caleb to Tobias.
"Caleb," Tobias says, "please shut up." To my surprise, my brother suppresses his erudite curiosity. The door opens again, and Therese steps back to let us in. We walk into an old boiler room with machinery that emerges from the darkness so suddenly, I hit it with my knees and elbows. Therese leads us through the maze of metal to the back of the room, where several bulbs dangle from the ceiling over a table. A middle-aged woman stands behind the table. She has curly black hair and olive skin. Her features are stern, so angular they almost make her unattractive. But not quite. Tobias clutches my hand. At that moment, I realize that he and the woman have the same nose. Hooked. A little too big on her face. But the right size on his. They also have the same strong jaw. Distinct chin, spare upper lip. Stick-out ears. Only her eyes are different. Instead of blue, they are so dark they look black.
"Evelyn," he says, his voice shaking a little.
Evelyn has the name of Marcus's wife, and Tobias's mother. My grip on Tobias's hand loosens. Just days ago I was remembering her funeral. Her funeral. And now she stands in front of me, her eyes colder than the eyes of any abnegation woman I've ever seen.
"Hello."
She walks around the table, surveying him.
"You look older."
"Yes, well,
the passage of time tends to do that to a person."
He already knew she was alive. How long ago did he find out? She smiles.
"So, you've finally come, not for the reason you think,"
he interrupts her. We were running from Erudite, and the only chance of escape we had required me to tell your poorly armed lackeys my name. She must have made him angry somehow. But I can't help but think that if I discovered my mother was alive after thinking she was dead for so long, I would never speak to her the way Tobias speaks to his mother now, no matter what she had done. The truth of that thought makes me ache. I push it aside and focus instead on what's in front of me. On the table behind Evelyn is a large map, with markers all over it. A map of the city, obviously, but I'm not sure what the markers mean. On the wall behind her is a chalkboard with a chart on it. I can't decipher the information in the chart. It's written in shorthand I don't know. I see. Evelyn's smile remains, but without its former touch of amusement. Introduce me to your fellow refugees, then. Her eyes drift down to our joined hands. Tobias's fingers spring apart. He gestures to me first. This is Triss Pryor, her brother Caleb, and their friend Susan Black.
Pryor, she says. I know of several Pryors, but none of them are named Triss. Beatrice, however.
Well, I say, I know of several living Eatons, but none of them are named Evelyn.
Evelyn Johnson is the name I prefer, particularly among a pack of abnegation.
Triss is the name I prefer, I reply, and we're not abnegation. Not all of us, anyway.
Evelyn gives Tobias a look. Interesting friends you've made.
Those are population counts, says Caleb from behind me. He walks forward, his mouth open. And what? Factionless safe houses?
He points to the first line on the chart, which reads 7. Greenhouse.
I mean these places on the map. They're safe houses like this one, right?
That's a lot of questions, says Evelyn, arching an eyebrow. I recognize the expression. It belongs to Tobias, as does her distaste for questions. For security purposes, I will not answer any of them. Anyway, it is time for dinner.
She gestures toward the door. Susan and Caleb start toward it, followed by me, and Tobias and his mother are last. We work our way through the maze of machinery again.
I'm not stupid, she says in a low voice. I know you want nothing to do with me, though I still don't quite understand why.
Tobias snorts.
But, she says, I will extend my invitation again. We could use your help here, and I know you are like-minded about the faction system.
Evelyn, Tobias says, I chose Dauntless.
Choices can be made again.
What makes you think I'm interested in spending my time anywhere near you? He demands. I hear his footsteps stop and slow down so I can hear how she responds.
Because I'm your mother, she says, and her voice almost breaks over the words, uncharacteristically vulnerable.
Because you're my son.
You really don't get it, he says. You don't have the vaguest conception of what you've done to me.
He sounds breathless.
I don't want to join up with your little band of factionless. I want to get out of here as quickly as possible.
My little band of factionless is twice the size of Dauntless, says Evelyn.
You would do well to take it seriously. Its actions may determine the future of this city.
With that, she walks ahead of him, and ahead of me. Her words echo in my mind.
Twice the size of Dauntless. When did they become so large?
Tobias looks at me, eyebrows lowered.
How long have you known? I say.
About a year. He slumps against the wall and closes his eyes. She sent a coded message to me in Dauntless, telling me to meet her at the train yard. I did because I was curious. And there she was. Alive. It wasn't a happy reunion, as you can probably guess.
Why did she leave abnegation?
She had an affair. He shakes his head. And no wonder, since my father... He shakes his head again. Well, let's just say Marcus wasn't any nicer to her than he was to me.
Is that why you're angry with her? Because she was unfaithful to him?
No. He says too sternly, his eyes opening. No. That's not why I'm angry.
I walk toward him as if approaching a wild animal, each footstep careful on the cement floor.
Then why?
She had to leave my father, I get that, he says. But did she think of taking me with her? I purse my lips.
Oh, she left you with him.
She left him alone with his worst nightmare. No wonder he hates her.
Yeah.
He kicks at the floor.
She did.
My fingers find his, fumbling, and he guides them into the spaces between his own. I know that's enough questions for now, so I let the silence linger between us until he decides to break it.
It seems to me, he says, that the factionless are better friends than enemies.
Maybe. But what would the cost of that friendship be? I say.
He shakes his head. I don't know. But we may not have any other option.
Chapter 9. One of the factionless started a fire so we could heat up our food. Those who want to eat sit in a circle around the large metal bowl that contains the fire, first heating the cans, then passing out spoons and forks, then passing cans around so everyone can have a bite of everything. I try not to think about how many diseases could spread this way, as I dip my spoon into a can of soup. Edward drops to the ground next to me and takes the can of soup from my hands.
So you were all abnegation, huh?
He shovels several noodles and a piece of carrot into his mouth, and passes the can to the woman on his left.
We were, I say.
But obviously, Tobias and I transferred, and... Suddenly it occurs to me that I shouldn't tell anyone Caleb joined Erudite.
Caleb and Susan are still abnegation.
And he's your brother, Caleb,
he says.
You ditch your family to become dauntless?
You sound like the Candor, I say irritably. Mind keeping your judgments to yourself?
Therese leans over.
He was Erudite first, actually, not Candor.
Yeah, I know. I say. She interrupts me.
So was I. Had to leave, though.
What happened?
I wasn't smart enough.
She shrugs and takes a can of beans from Edward, plunging her spoon into it.
I didn't get a high enough score on my initiation intelligence test. So they said, spend your entire life cleaning up the research labs, or leave.
And I left. She looks down and licks her spoon clean. I take the beans from her and pass them along to Tobias, who is staring at the fire.
Are many of you from Erudite?
I say.
Therese shakes her head.
Most are from Dauntless, actually.
She jerks her head toward Edward, who scowls. Then Erudite. Then Candor. Then a handful of Amity. No one fails abnegation initiation, though. So we have very few of those. Except for a bunch who survived the simulation attack and came to us for refuge.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised about Dauntless, I say.
Well, yeah. You've got one of the worst initiations, and there's that whole old age thing.
Old age thing? I say. I glance at Tobias. He is listening now, and he looks almost normal again. His eyes thoughtful and dark in the firelight.
Once the Dauntless reach a certain level of physical deterioration, he says, they are asked to leave, in one way or another.
What's the other way?
My heart pounds, like it already knows an answer I can't face without prompting.
Let's just say, says Tobias, that for some, death is preferable to factionlessness.
Those people are idiots, says Edward. I'd rather be factionless than dauntless.
How fortunate that you ended up where you did then, says Tobias coldly.
Fortunate? Edward snorts. Yeah, I'm so fortunate with my one eye and all.
I seem to recall hearing rumors that you provoked that attack, says Tobias.
What are you talking about? I say. He was winning, that's all, and Peter was jealous, so he just...
I see the smirk on Edward's face and stop talking. Maybe I don't know everything about what happened during initiation.
There was an inciting incident, says Edward,
in which Peter did not come out the victor.
But it certainly didn't warrant a butter knife to the eye. No arguments here, says Tobias. If it makes you feel any better, he got shot in the arm from a foot away during the simulation attack.
And it does seem to make Edward feel better, because his smirk carves a deeper line into his face.
Who did that? He says. You?
Tobias shakes his head.
Tristed.
Well done, Edward says. I nod, but I feel a little sick to be congratulated for that. Well, not that sick. It was Peter, after all. I stare at the flames wrapping around the fragments of wood that fuel them. They move and shift, like my thoughts. I remember the first time I realized I had never seen an elderly Dauntless. And when I realized my father was too old to climb the paths of the pit. Now I understand more about that than I'd like to.
Do you know much about how things are right now?
Tobias asks Edward.
Do all the Dauntless side with Erudite? Has Candor done anything?
Dauntless is split in half, Edward says, talking around the food in his mouth. Half at Erudite headquarters, half at Candor headquarters. What's left of Abnegation is with us. Nothing much has happened yet, except for whatever happened to you, I guess.
Tobias nods. I feel a little relieved to know that half of the Dauntless at least are not traitors. I eat spoonful after spoonful until my stomach is full. Then Tobias gets us sleeping pallets and blankets, and I find an empty corner for us to lie down in. When he bends over to untie his shoes, I see the symbol of Amity on the small of his back, the branches curling over his spine. When he straightens, I step across the blankets and put my arms around him, brushing the tattoo with my fingers. Tobias closes his eyes. I trust the dwindling fire to disguise us as I run my hand up his back, touching each tattoo without seeing it. I imagine Erudite's staring eye, Candor's unbalanced scales, Abnegation's clasped hands, and the Dauntless flames. With my other hand, I find the patch of fire tattooed over his ribcage. I feel his heavy breaths against my cheek.
I wish we were alone, he says. I almost always wish that, I say.
I drift off to sleep, carried by the sound of distant conversations. These days it's easier for me to fall asleep when there is noise around me. I can focus on the sound instead of whatever thoughts would crawl into my head in silence. Noise and activity are the refuges of the bereaved and the guilty. I wake when the fire is just aglow, and only a few of the factionless are still up. It takes me a few seconds to figure out why I woke up. I heard Evelyn's and Tobias's voices a few feet away from me. I stay still and hope they don't discover that I'm awake.
You'll have to tell me what's going on here if you expect me to consider helping you, he says,
though I'm still not sure why you need me at all.
I see Evelyn's shadow on the wall, flickering with the fire. She is lean and strong, just like Tobias. Her fingers twist into her hair as she speaks.
What would you like to know exactly?
Tell me about the chart.
And the map.
Your friend was correct in thinking that the map and the chart listed all of our safe houses, she says. He was wrong about the population counts.
Sort of.
The numbers don't document all the factionless, only certain ones. And I'll bet you can guess which ones those are.
I'm not in the mood for guessing.
She sighs.
The Divergent. We're documenting the Divergent.
How do you know who they are?
Before the simulation attack, part of the Abnegation aid effort involved testing the factionless for a certain genetic anomaly, she says. Sometimes that testing involved re-administering the aptitude test. Sometimes it was more complicated than that. But they explained to us that they suspected we might have the highest Divergent population of any group in the city.
I don't understand.
Why would the factionless have a high Divergent population?
It sounds like she's smirking.
Obviously, those who can't confine themselves to a particular way of thinking would be most likely to leave a faction or fail its initiation, right?
That's not what I was going to ask, he says. I want to know why you care how many Divergent there are.
The Erudite are looking for manpower. They found it temporarily in Dauntless. Now they'll be looking for more. And we're the obvious place. Unless they figure out that we've got more Divergent than any other group. Just in case they don't, I want to know how many people we've got who are resistant to simulations.
Fair enough, he says.
But why were the Abnegation so concerned with finding the Divergent? It wasn't to help Janine, was it?
Of course not, she says.
But I'm afraid I don't know.
The Abnegation were reluctant to provide information that only serves to relieve curiosity.
They told us as much as they believed we should know.
Strange, he mumbles.
Perhaps you should ask your father about it, she says.
He was the one who told me about you.
About me? Says Tobias.
What about me?
That he suspected you were Divergent, she says.
He was always watching you.
Noting your behavior.
He was very attentive to you.
That's why I thought you would be safe with him. Safer with him than with me.
Tobias says nothing.
I see now that I must have been wrong.
He still says nothing.
I wish... She starts. Don't you dare try to apologize.
His voice shakes.
This is not something you can bandage with a word or two and some hugging or something.
Okay, she says.
Okay, I won't. For what purpose are the factionless uniting?
He says.
What do you intend to do?
We want to usurp Erudite, she says. Once we get rid of them, there's not much stopping us from controlling the government ourselves.
That's what you expect me to help you with?
Overthrowing one corrupt government and instating some kind of factionless tyranny? He snorts.
Not a chance. We don't want to be tyrants, she says. We want to establish a new society. One without factions.
My mouth goes dry.
No factions? A world in which no one knows who they are or where they fit? I can't even fathom it. I imagine only chaos and isolation.
Tobias lets out a laugh.
Right. So how are you going to usurp Erudite?
Sometimes, drastic change requires drastic measures. Evelyn's shadow lifts a shoulder.
I imagine it will involve a high level of destruction.
I shiver at the word destruction. Somewhere in the darker parts of me, I crave destruction, as long as it is Erudite being destroyed.
But the word carries new meaning for me, now that I have seen what it can look like. Gray-clothed bodies slung across curbs and over sidewalks. Abnegation leaders shot in their front lawns, next to their mailboxes. I press my face into the pallet that I'm sleeping on, so hard it hurts my forehead, just to force the memory out, out, out.
As for why we need you, Evelyn says, in order to do this, we will need Dauntless's help. They have the weapons and the combat experience. You could bridge the gap between us and them.
Do you think I'm important to the Dauntless? Because I'm not. I'm just someone who isn't afraid of much.
What I am suggesting, she says, is that you become important.
She stands, her shadow stretching from ceiling to floor.
I am sure you can find a way if you want to.
Think about it.
She pulls back her curly hair and ties it in a knot.
The door is always open.
A few minutes later, he lies next to me again.
I don't want to admit that I was eavesdropping, but I want to tell him I don't trust Evelyn, or the factionless, or anyone who speaks so casually about demolishing an entire faction.
Before I can muster the courage to speak, his breaths become even, and he falls asleep.
Chapter 10. I run my hand over the back of my neck to lift the hair that sticks there. My entire body aches, especially my legs, which burn with lactic acid even when I'm not moving.
and I don't smell very good. I need to shower. I wander down the hall and into the bathroom. I'm not the only person with bathing in mind. A group of women stand at the sinks, half of them naked, the other half completely unfazed by it. I find a free sink in the corner and stick my head under the faucet, letting cold water spill over my ears.
"Hello," Susan says.
I turn my head to the side. Water courses down my cheek and into my nose. She is carrying two towels. One white, one gray, both frayed at the edges.
"Hi,"
I say.
"I have an idea," she says.
She turns her back to me and holds up a towel, blocking my view of the rest of the bathroom. I sigh with relief. Privacy. Or as much of it as possible. I strip quickly and grab the bar of soap next to the sink.
"How are you?"
she says.
"I'm fine."
I know she's only asking because faction rules dictate that she does. I wish she would just speak to me freely.
"How are you, Susan?"
"Better."
"Therese told me there is a large group of abnegation refugees in one of the factionless safe houses,"
says Susan as I lather soap into my hair.
"Oh?"
I say. I shove my head under the faucet again, this time massaging my scalp with my left hand to get the soap out.
"Are you going to go?"
"Yes," says Susan. "Unless you need my help."
"Thanks for the offer, but I think your faction needs you more," I say, turning off the faucet. I wish I didn't have to get dressed. It's too hot for denim pants. But I grab the other towel from the floor and dry myself in a hurry. I put on the red shirt I was wearing before. I don't want to put on something that dirty again, but I have no other choice.
"I suspect some of the factionless women have spare clothes," says Susan.
"You're probably right. Okay, your turn." I stand with the towel as Susan washes up. My arms start to ache after a while, but she ignored the pain for me, so I'll do the same for her. Water splashes on my ankles when she washes her hair. "This is a situation I never thought we would be in together," I say after a while. "Bathing from the sink of an abandoned building on the run from the erudite."
"I thought we would live near each other," says Susan. "Go to social events together. Have our kids walk to the bus stop together." I bite my lip at that. It is my fault, of course, that that was never a possibility. Because I chose another faction.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring it up," she says. "I just regret that I didn't pay more attention. If I had, maybe I would have known what you were going through." "I acted selfishly."
I laugh a little.
"Susan, there's nothing wrong with the way you acted."
"I'm done," she says. "Can you hand me that towel?"
I close my eyes and turn so she can grab the towel from my hands. When Therese walks into the bathroom, smoothing her hair into a braid, Susan asks her for spare clothes. By the time we leave the bathroom, I wear jeans and a black shirt that is so loose up top that it slips off my shoulders. And Susan wears baggy jeans and a white candor shirt with a collar. She buttons it up to her throat. The abnegation are modest to the point of discomfort. When I enter the large room again, some of the factionless are walking out with buckets of paint and paintbrushes. I watch them until the door closes behind them. "They're going to write a message to the other safe houses," says Evelyn from behind me. "On one of the billboards. Codes formed out of personal information, so-and-so's favorite color, someone else's childhood pet." I'm not sure why she would choose to tell me something about the factionless codes until I turn around. I see a familiar look in her eyes. It is the same as the one Janine wore when she told Tobias she had developed a serum that could control him. Pride. "Clever," I say.
"Your idea?"
"It was, actually." She shrugs, but I am not fooled. She is anything but nonchalant.
"I was erudite before I was abnegation."
"Oh," I say. "Guess you couldn't keep up with a life of academia then." She doesn't take the bait.
"Something like that. Yes."
She pauses.
I imagine your father left for the same reason.
I almost turn away to end the conversation. But her words create a kind of pressure inside my mind, like she is squeezing my brain between her hands. I stare.
You didn't know?
She frowns. I'm sorry.
I forgot that faction members rarely discuss their old factions.
What?
I say, my voice cracking.
Your father was born an erudite,
she says.
His parents were friends with Janine Matthews's parents, before they died. Your father and Janine used to play together as children. I used to watch them pass books back and forth at school.
I imagine my father, a grown man, sitting next to Janine, a grown woman at a lunch table in my old cafeteria, a book between them. The idea is so ridiculous to me that I half snort, half laugh. It can't be true. Except. He never talked about his family, or his childhood. Except. He did not have the quiet demeanor of someone who grew up in abnegation. Except. His hatred of erudite was so vehement, it must have been personal.
I'm sorry, Beatrice, Evelyn says.
I didn't mean to reopen closing wounds.
I frown.
Yes, you did.
What do you mean?
Listen carefully, I say, lowering my voice. I check over her shoulder for Tobias, to make sure he isn't listening in. All I see is Caleb and Susan on the ground in the corner, passing a can of peanut butter back and forth. No Tobias.
I'm not stupid, I say. I can see that you're trying to use him, and I'll tell him so if he hasn't figured it out already.
My dear girl, she says, I am his family. I am permanent. You are only temporary.
Yeah, I say. His mom abandoned him, and his dad beat him up. How could his loyalty not be with his blood, with a family like that?
I walk away, my hands shaking, and sit down next to Caleb on the floor. Susan is now across the room, helping one of the factionless clean up. He passes me the jar of peanut butter. I remember the rows of peanut plants in the Amity greenhouses. They grow peanuts because they are high in protein and fat, which is important for the factionless in particular. I scoop some of the peanut butter out with my fingers and eat it.
Should I tell him what Evelyn just told me?
I don't want to make him think that he is erudite in his blood. I don't want to give him any reason to return to them.
I decide to keep it to myself for now.
I wanted to talk to you about something, says Caleb. I nod, still working the peanut butter off the roof of my mouth.
Susan wants to go see the abnegation, he says. And so do I. I also want to make sure she's all right. But I don't want to leave you.
It's okay, I say. Why don't you come with us? He asks. Abnegation would welcome you back. I'm sure of it.
So am I.
The abnegation don't hold grudges. But I am teetering on the edge of grief's mouth. And if I returned to my parents' old faction, it would swallow me.
I shake my head.
I have to go to Candor headquarters and find out what's going on, I say. I'm going crazy not knowing.
I force a smile.
But you should go. Susan needs you.
She seems better, but she still needs you.
Okay.
Caleb nods.
Well, I'll try to join you soon.
Be careful, though.
Aren't I always?
No. I think the word for how you usually are is reckless.
Caleb squeezes my good shoulder lightly. I eat another fingertip's worth of peanut butter. Tobias emerges from the men's bathroom a few minutes later, his red Amity shirt replaced by a black t-shirt, and his short hair glistening with water. Our eyes meet across the room, and I know it's time to leave.
Candor headquarters is large enough to contain an entire world. Or so it seems to me. It is a wide cement building that overlooks what was once the river. The sign says Merc, is Mart. It used to read Merchandise Mart, but
but most people refer to it as the Merciless Mart, because the Kandor are merciless, but honest. They seem to have embraced the nickname. I don't know what to expect, because I have never been inside. Tobias and I pause outside the doors and look at each other.
Here we go,
he says. I can't see anything beyond my reflection in the glass doors. I look tired and dirty. For the first time, it occurs to me that we don't have to do anything. We could hole up with the factionless and let the rest of them sort through this mess. We could be nobodies, safe, together. He still hasn't told me about the conversation he had with his mother last night, and I don't think he's going to. He seems so determined to get to Kandor headquarters that I wonder if he's planning something without me. I don't know why I walk through the doors. Maybe I decide that we've come this far. We might as well see what's going on. But I suspect it's more than I know what's true and what's not. I am divergent, so I am not nobody. There's no such thing as safe. And I have other things on my mind than playing house with Tobias.
And so, apparently, does he.
The lobby is large and well lit, with black marble floors that stretch back to an elevator bank. A ring of white marble tiles in the center of the room form the symbol of Kandor. A set of unbalanced scales, meant to symbolize the weighing of truth against lies. The room is crawling with armed dauntless. A dauntless soldier with an arm and a sling approaches us, gun held ready, barrel fixed on Tobias. "Identify yourselves," she says. She is young, but not young enough to know Tobias. The others gather behind her. Some of them eye us with suspicion, the rest with curiosity. But far stranger than both is the light I see in some of their eyes. Recognition. They might know Tobias, but how could they possibly recognize me?
"Four," he says. He nods toward me. "And this is Triss. Both dauntless."
The dauntless soldier's eyes widen, but she does not lower her gun.
"Some help here?"
she asks. Some of the dauntless step forward, but they do it cautiously, like we're dangerous.
"Is there a problem?"
Tobias says.
"Are you armed?"
"Of course I'm armed. I'm dauntless, aren't I?"
"Stand with your hands behind your head!"
She says it wildly, like she expects us to refuse. I glance at Tobias. Why is everyone acting like we're about to attack them?
"We walk through the front door," I say slowly. "You think we would have done that if we were here to hurt you?"
Tobias doesn't look back at me. He just touches his fingertips to the back of his head. After a moment, I do the same. Dauntless soldiers crowd around us. One of them pats down Tobias's legs while the other takes the gun tucked under his waistband. Another one, a round-faced boy with pink cheeks, looks at me apologetically. "I have a knife in my back pocket," I say. "Put your hands on me, and I will make you regret it." He mumbles some kind of apology. His fingers pinch the knife handle, careful not to touch me.
"What's going on?" asks Tobias.
The first soldier exchanges looks with some of the others.
"I'm sorry," she says. "But we were instructed to arrest you upon your arrival."
Chapter 11. They surround us, but don't handcuff us, and walk us to the elevator bank. No matter how many times I ask why we are under arrest, no one says anything or even looks in my direction. Eventually, I give up and stay silent, like Tobias. We go to the third level, where they take us to a small room with a white marble floor instead of a black one. There's no furniture, except for a bench along the back wall. Every faction is supposed to have holding rooms for those who make trouble, but I've never been in one before. The door closes behind us and locks, and we're alone again. Tobias sits down on the bench, his brow furrowed. I pace back and forth in front of him. If he had any idea why we were in here, he would tell me, so I don't ask. I walk 5 steps forward and 5 steps back, 5 steps forward and 5 steps back, at the same rhythm, hoping it will help me figure something out.
If Erudite didn't take over Candor, and Edward told us they didn't, why would the Candor arrest us? What could we have done to them? If Erudite didn't take over, the only real crime left is siding with them. Did I do anything that could have been interpreted as siding with Erudite? My teeth dig into my lower lip so hard I wince. Yes, I did. I shot Will. I shot a number of other Dauntless. They were under the simulation, but maybe Candor doesn't know that or doesn't think it's a good enough reason. Can you please calm down? Tobias says. You're making me nervous. This is me coming down! He leans forward, resting his elbows on his knees, and stares between his sneakers. The wound in your lip begs to differ. I sit next to him and hug my knees to my chest with one arm, my right arm hanging at my side. For a long time he says nothing, and my arm wraps tighter and tighter around my legs. I feel like the smaller I become, the safer I am. Sometimes, he says, I worry that you don't trust me. I trust you, I say. Of course I trust you. Why would you think otherwise? Just seems like there's something you're not telling me. I told you things, he shakes his head, I would never have told anyone else. Something's been going on with you, though, and you haven't told me yet. There's been a lot going on. You know that? I say. And anyway, what about you? I could say the same thing to you. He touches my cheek, his fingers pushing into my hair, ignoring my question, just like I ignored his. If it's just about your parents, he says softly, tell me and I'll believe you. His eyes should be wild with apprehension, given where we are. But they are still and dark. They transport me to familiar places, safe places, where confessing that I shot one of my best friends would be easy, where I would not be afraid of the way that Tobias will look at me when he finds out what I did. I cover his hand with mine. That's all it is, I say weakly. Okay, he says. He touches his mouth to mine. Guilt clutches at my stomach. The door opens. A few people file in. Two Candor with guns. A dark-skinned, older Candor man. A Dauntless woman I don't recognize. And then, Jack Kang, representative of Candor. By most faction standards, he is a young leader, only 39 years old. But by Dauntless standards, that's nothing. Eric became a Dauntless leader at 17. But that's probably one of the reasons the other factions don't take our opinions or decisions seriously. Jack is handsome, too, with short black hair and warm slanted eyes, like Tori's, and high cheekbones. Despite his good looks, he isn't known for being charming, probably because he's Candor, and they see charm as deceptive. I do trust him to tell us what's going on without wasting time on pleasantries. That is something. They told me you seemed confused about why you were arrested, he says. His voice is deep but strangely flat, like it could not create an echo even at the bottom of an empty cavern. To me that means either you're falsely accused or good at pretending. The only... What are we accused of? I interrupt him. He is accused of crimes against humanity. You are accused of being his accomplice. Crimes against humanity? Tobias finally sounds angry. He gives Jack a disgusted look. What? We saw video footage of the attack. You were running the attack simulation, says Jack. How could you have seen footage? We took the data, says Tobias. You took one copy of the data. All the footage of the Dauntless compound recorded during the attack was also sent to other computers throughout the city, says Jack. All we saw was you running the simulation and her nearly getting punched to death before she gave up. Then you stopped, had a rather abrupt lover's reconciliation, and stole the hard drive together. One possible reason is because the simulation was over and you didn't want us to get our hands on it. I almost laugh. My great act of heroism, the only important thing I've ever done, and they think I was working for the Erudite when I did it.
The simulation didn't end, I say. We stopped it. You... Jack holds up his hand.
I am not interested in what you have to say right now. The truth will come out when you are both interrogated under the influence of truth serum.
Christina told me about truth serum once.
She said the most difficult part of candor initiation was being given truth serum and answering personal questions in front of everyone in the faction. I don't need to search myself for my deepest, darkest secrets to know that truth serum is the last thing I want in my body.
Truth serum?
I shake my head. No. No way. There's something you have to hide? Jack says, lifting both eyebrows. I want to tell him that anyone with an ounce of dignity wants to keep some things to herself. But I don't want to arouse his suspicions. So I shake my head.
All right, then.
He checks his watch. It is now noon. The interrogation will be at 7. Don't bother preparing for it. You can't withhold information while under the influence of truth serum.
He turns on his heel and walks out of the room.
What a pleasant man, says Tobias.
A group of armed dauntless escort me to the bathroom in the early afternoon. I take my time, letting my hands turn red in the hot faucet water and staring at my reflection. When I was in abnegation and wasn't allowed to look into mirrors, I used to think that a lot could change in a person's appearance in 3 months. But it only took a few days to change me this time. I look older. Maybe it's the short hair. Or maybe it's just that I wear all that has happened like a mask. Either way, I always thought I would be happy when I stopped looking like a child. But all I feel is a lump in my throat. I am no longer the daughter my parents knew. They will never know me as I am now. I turn away from the mirror and shove the door to the hallway open with the heels of my hands. When the Dauntless drop me off at the holding room, I linger by the door. Tobias looks like he did when I first met him. Black t-shirt, short hair, stern expression. The sight of him used to fill me with nervous excitement. I remember when I grabbed his hand outside the training room, just for a few seconds, and when we sat together on the rocks next to the chasm, and I feel a pang of longing for how things used to be.
Hungry? He says. He offers me a sandwich from the plate next to him.
I take it and sit down, leaning my head on his shoulder. All that's left for us to do is wait. So that's what we do. We eat until the food is gone. We sit until we get uncomfortable. Then we lie down next to each other on the floor, shoulders touching, staring at the same patch of white ceiling.
What are you afraid of saying?
He says.
Any of it? All of it?
I don't want to relive anything.
He nods.
I close my eyes and pretend to sleep. There's no clock in the room, so I can't count down the minutes until the interrogation. Time might as well not exist in this place, except I feel it pressing against me as 7 o'clock inevitably draws closer, pushing me into the floor tiles. Maybe time would not feel as heavy if I didn't have this guilt. The guilt of knowing the truth and stuffing it down where no one can see it, not even Tobias. Maybe I should not be so afraid of saying anything, because honesty will make me feel lighter. I must have fallen asleep eventually, because I jerk awake at the sound of the door opening. A few dauntless walk in as we get to our feet, and one of them says my name. Christina shoves her way past the others and throws her arms around me. Her fingers dig into the wound in my shoulder and I cry out.
Gut shot!
I say.
Shoulder!
Ow!
Oh God!
She releases me.
Sorry, Triss!
She doesn't look like the Christina I remember. Her hair is shorter, like a boy's, and her skin is grayish instead of a warm brown. She smiles at me, but the smile doesn't travel to her eyes, which still look tired. I try to smile back, but I'm too nervous. Christina will be there at my interrogation. She will hear what I did to Will. She will never forgive me. Unless I fight the serum, swallow the truth, if I can. But is that really what I want? To let it fester inside me forever?
You okay? I heard you were here, so I asked to escort you, she says as we leave the holding room.
I know you didn't do it. You're not a traitor.
I'm fine, I say. And thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm...
Her voice trails off, and she bites her lip.
Did anyone tell you?
I mean, maybe now isn't the time, but...
What? What is it?
Will died in the attack, she says. She gives me a worried look, and an expectant one.
Expecting what?
Oh. I am not supposed to know that Will is dead. I could pretend to be emotional, but I probably wouldn't do it convincingly. It's best to admit that I already knew, but I don't know how to explain that without telling her everything. I feel suddenly sick. Am I really evaluating how best to deceive my friend?
I know, I say. I saw him on the monitors when I was in the control room.
I'm sorry, Christina.
Oh,
she nods.
Well, I'm glad you already knew. I really didn't want to break the news to you in a hallway.
A short laugh. A flash of a smile. Neither of them like they used to be. We file into an elevator. I can feel Tobias staring at me. He knows I didn't see Will in the monitors, and he didn't know that Will was dead. I stare straight ahead and pretend his eyes aren't setting me on fire.
Don't worry about the truth serum, she says. It's easy. You barely know what's happening when you're under. It's only when you resurface that you even know what you said.
I went under when I was a kid. It's pretty commonplace in Candor. The other Dauntless in the elevator give each other looks. In normal circumstances, someone would probably reprimand her for discussing her old faction. But these are not normal circumstances. At no other time in Christina's life will she escort her best friend, now a suspected traitor, to a public interrogation.
Is everyone else all right? I say. Uriah, Lynn, Marlene?
All here, she says. Except Uriah's brother, Zeke, who is with the other Dauntless.
What?
Zeke, who secured my straps on the zip line.
A traitor?
The elevator stops on the top floor and the others file out.
I know, she says. No one saw it coming.
She takes my arm and tugs me toward the doors. We walk down a black marble hallway. It must be easy to get lost in Candor headquarters, since everything looks the same. We walk down another hallway and through a set of double doors. From the outside, the merciless Mart is a squat block with a narrow raised portion in its center. From the inside, that raised portion is a hollow three-story room with empty spaces in the walls instead of windows. I see the darkening sky above me, starless. Here the marble floors are white, with a black Candor symbol in the center of the room, and the walls are lit with rows of dim yellow lights, so the whole room glows. Every voice echoes. Most of Candor and the remnants of Dauntless are already gathered. Some of them sit on the tiered benches that wrap around the edge of the room. But there isn't enough space for everyone. So the rest are crowded around the Candor symbol. In the center of the symbol, between the unbalanced scales, are two empty chairs. Tobias reaches for my hand. I lace my fingers in his. Our Dauntless guards lead us to the center of the room, where we are greeted with, at best, murmurs, and at worst, jeers. I spot Jack Kang in the front row of the tiered benches. An old, dark-skinned man steps forward, a black box in his hands.
My name is Niles, he says. I will be your questioner. You,
he points at Tobias.
You? We'll be going first. So if you will please step forward.
Tobias squeezes my hand and then releases it, and I stand with Christina at the edge of the Candor symbol. The air in the room is warm, moist summer air, sunset air, but I feel cold. Niles opens up the black box. It contains two needles, one for Tobias and one for me. He also takes an antiseptic wipe from his pocket and offers it to Tobias. We didn't bother with that kind of thing in Dauntless.
The injection site is in your neck, Niles says.
All I hear, as Tobias applies antiseptic to his skin,